Welcome to the Upland Nation podcast. Scott Linden here. Hoping you're having a great off season. I know I am, and enjoying the heck out of it. And we'll have a lot of advice that you can employ this off season and then going into next hunting season as well. So stick around. The main topic of discussion, dog training and dog behavior, with some of the gurus in that world. I call them the first couple of dog training, Ronnie Smith and Susanna Love, authors, magazine writers, lifelong dog hunters, pro hunting guides. Well, they know it all, and they're from, of course, the famous Smith family of Ronnie Sr., Delmar, and Rick Smith. So you'll learn something. No doubt about it, so stick around for that. But also some curiosity, some fun facts to know and tell. I asked everybody on social media how many different dog breeds they've hunted with, and I think you'll be amused and astounded at some of the answers. And then finally, our Handle It segment this week, starting to answer some of the questions you're asking over at social media. We'll be answering one about a young dog startled by birds. And I'll have some suggestions for everybody, starting with the owner of that dog. It's all made possible by Sage and Breaker Gun Care Products, Pointer Shotguns, Mid-Valley Clays and Shooting School, TruLock Choke Tubes, MidwayUSA.com, Purina Pro Plan Sport Dog Food, LandTrust.com, ESP America, and Hi-Viz Shooting Systems. Well, around here, we broke out the bird launchers. We got the pigeons in okay shape. Not all of them. Some of the young ones still need some work, but we're starting our bird contacts here at the home ranch, and so far, so good. I'm knocking wood, as you might hear. Flick is doing great. He remembered just about everything we worked on before, and it's all coming back fairly quickly. Putting him on birds in the back 40, hoping that he remembers to hold still while the bird flies away and then while the gun goes bang. So we're complicating matters by putting more than one bird in the launcher, and so far so good. Thanks, Tom, for your help on that. You know, I don't know if you hunt or train with a partner, but both of those become much more enjoyable. So if you're looking to train this time of year and you're looking for help, don't hesitate to call somebody, maybe somebody who hasn't ever hunted with you. Great way to recruit a new hunting partner. All right, end of lecture. I asked you all on Facebook, how many dog breeds, just out of curiosity, how many dog breeds have you hunted with? Because I, you know, depending on how you define that, and I had some discretion on that as well. Not all the dogs that you've trained with at a club day or something like that, but the ones you've actually been in the field hunting with. And I got some great responses. Brandon Culp says, it depends. Do DD and GWP count as one or two? I bet the DD guys would say it counts as two, but I'm not going to stir up that hornet's nest. Mike Thiel says, GSP, Goldens. Oh, a short-haired golden set her across, family dog, and a great hunting combo there, and a wire-haired pointing Griffon. So I get it. Jeffrey Hatwig, listen to this list, everybody. Wisla, mutts, wire-haired pointers, labs, Gordon setter, English setter, GSP, dachshund. Yep. They will do the job. Absolutely. Isn't that the truth? I'm looking. Oh my, here's a long list. Jason Norris. Just take all the ones I just listed and add to it. Seski Fusik, English Setter, Weimaraner, Wisla, Boykin. Let's see. Oh, it goes on. And I bet there's 15 dogs on that. I think that's about me too. You know, I'm lucky enough to do that on TV, so it helps a lot. Nancy Annisfield, Tank. Yeah, absolutely true. That is Tank, and it is in Georgia where we shot that episode. Absolutely. Some other fascinating answers here. Brittany, Mountain Cur, Springers, and Llewellyns from Lane Brown. Four generations of GWP for Gordon Vavrek, and that's not counting the Goldens, the Labs, the Springers, the Pointers, the Llewellyns. Beagles are on the list for Dean Bentley, among others. Bracco Italiano, Lance Larson. I'm a little surprised you went over to the Italian side, but maybe that was just a buddy's dog back in the day. I know your affinity for those gray ghosts very well, and someday maybe we'll get back together and hunt them together. My fuzzy-faced German dogs and your smooth gray German dogs. So great list. If you want to, you know, if you're looking for dogs, and that's how this got started. I have a good friend who is actually shopping for a puppy right now, and he's willing to look at just about anything. So, hey, good answers. And Dave, I hope you're listening too. You might get some ideas there. I am spending a lot of time on the social media pages for a bunch of reasons. You'll learn more about that in a few minutes. But right now, a moment and some reflection from our sponsors. ProPlan Sport, of course, the dog food designed for active, hardworking dogs. Sporting dogs, athletes, whatever you want to call them, we've got them, and we're looking for the best for our dog, not only just for their health, but for their performance. Well, there are formulas for just about every life stage in this ProPlan lineup, from a puppy formula to a senior-specific formula. They're all formulated so that they concentrate the nutrition to optimize oxygen metabolism, what the runners and the performance humans call VO2 max. And that translates to increased endurance during exercise. Learn more at ProPlanSport.com. And if you're like me, yeah, I'll tell you that story in a couple minutes, and you want to see what you've been missing, go to HighVisSights.com. Learn more about their the variety of shotgun sights they have. You know, they've kind of pioneered that whole area. The founder had a vision to improve shooting for us. And yeah, you know what it's like if you're missing all the time. Take a look at some of their light pipe colors. They're all interchangeable. They're easy to install. Most of them are magnetic. And they may just change your relationship between your gun muzzle and your target, i.e., more birds in the bag. Learn more at HighVisSights.com. Welcome back to the Sioux Falls, I'll just call it the Convention Center. It's got three or four names, doesn't it? We're at the Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic here and having a great time. As you can hear, we're right on the show floor at the Pointer Shotguns booth with some good friends who I only get to see once a year at this. Ronnie, I'm sorry I didn't get to your seminar out west this time. Ronnie Smith, Susanna Love, yeah, they're married. But Susanna's a strong, independent woman and a great mom and a great wife, I bet, too, Ronnie. Welcome to the first couple of bird dog training.
Well, thank you for having
us.
Thank
you. Thank you very much.
It's been an incredible show for me. You know, we can gripe about little things here and there, but how is this event for you two? You go to a lot of events. What do you feel about this one in particular?
Oh, it's, you know, we come straight from the training field to big city and a lot of people, so it's pretty intense for us, but... You know, there's so many good people here. It is a great event to come to. We really love coming here.
Yeah, and I think it gives us an opportunity to talk with people about things that are important to us at that time. Because, you know, as years go on and dogs change, different things become important.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, you get to talk, you get to answer some questions and learn some things, and it's a great experience.
You know, and that does remind me, you know, things do change. I had an eye-opening experience on another interview yesterday where we talked about eye contact with dogs. And somehow that led to my thinking about something that you were big on, keeping dogs calm or bringing them to a, a point of repose. This year, you're talking about other things as well. What are the main topics you're talking about with people these days?
Well, we've got some core behaviors and mindsets that we've really boiled everything down so that people can keep small little tidbits in mind when they're working with their dog. So you're talking about the composure there. And that's one of three things that we try to keep on people's radar. The three C's is what we call them.
Great.
Composure, confidence, and compliance. So if we're always trying to shift our dogs into those three mindsets, we've got a dog that's easier to train, a dog that's easier to live with, and a lot more fun to hunt with.
Yeah. Do they have to go in that order, Ronnie?
No, I think, you know, the composure, I do believe, is the initial phase that you want to focus on. And I think, too, to add to that is trying to help people realize that don't train with words.
I know.
It doesn't make sense because you think, well, you know, they need to know here and they need to know whoa and all of that. And that's true. They do.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're human beings and we're trying to teach an animal that communicates with observing inflection in your voice.
Yeah.
Inflection
yeah.
in your body.
Uh-huh.
Right? Smell that comes from your body that we're not even aware of. So if we really want to convey or get proper association, that's how we need to think on the level of the dog. So if you try to get just a core mindset, right, then it makes it easier for that dog to be successful. We can name all of those things later.
Yeah.
But we really want to pay attention to the dog.
Yeah. You know, I've heard a lot this weekend about how a dog thinks, or we should think about how a dog thinks. How about the second C, Susanna? Composure?
Confidence?
Yeah.
Well, confidence comes from having been exposed to things and being successful. Confidence comes from, you know, being on a path of learning. So we always recommend to our clients, you know, take your dog, socialize them, take them to new events. You know, we've seen a lot of dogs here this weekend.
Yeah.
And those dogs are building confidence over the course of the weekend. You know, Friday morning, boy, we saw a lot of fearful, stressed dogs because there's so much going on here at this convention, so much stimulation for these dogs to deal with. But as the weekend goes on, they're gaining in experience and they're more confident in this new environment. So we've always got to keep their development moving forward, keep them growing and developing, getting more confident.
You know, it's funny, you're absolutely right, and we never think about confidence as socialization, but it is one and the same quite often, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's that refill, it's that bounce back, you know, whenever a dog sees a new situation or experiences stressors in life, the ability to acknowledge that and then bounce back from that and move forward.
Yeah. Did you say refeel?
Because
if you didn't, you should. That is all right, I'll take credit for it. That's a word you should probably use. I don't know how to describe it, but there is a behavior called refeel, I swear.
Right.
Anyway.
It's probably my southern draw.
Yeah, and you are a little closer to Texas now than you were, I think, well, 2 years ago.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so the third C. Ronnie, you want to elaborate?
Yeah, compliance. You know, if a dog has the right mindset, you know, mindset that's not agitated or reactive, right? A dog that is in a composed state of mind, then that dog is more compliant. It's easier for him to be more compliant. You get all of the kind of the white noise out of his mind, and he's just a more proficient dog in the field, well, in everyday life.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to suggest, and you have the experience working with owners and owners and owners who have made all the mistakes I make on a daily basis. The first C, I bet, is the hardest one for them to get over. We can read all the books about compliance and confidence, but that composure thing, still, I've thought about that a lot since I first heard you talking about it. How can we
calm our dogs down, you know, whether it's in the field or in a training situation in the yard, on the table, whatever, are there things that we should be doing, whether physical or otherwise, Susanna?
Absolutely. And we all have to recognize that there is a genetic component to this. You know, we're all going to start at different stages with our dogs. Some dogs just naturally are more composed than others.
Yeah.
Others, we're going to have to help them throughout their life just to attain a little bit of composure.
Yep.
So we're always
By the way, I have one of those.
I am one of those.
So we're always looking at where that dog is in the moment and how we can help them get more composed from that moment.
Yeah.
So usually for us, that starts in the home.
Yeah.
You know, the daily routine, what your daily activities are with that dog is shaping that dog, whether you want to or not, whether it's intentional that you're shaping that animal, just your interaction on a daily basis shapes behavior.
Yeah.
So we try to get people to intentionally interact with their dog that rewards the calmness. You know, we were talking about words earlier. Words are a human trait. You know, we want to talk. We feel good when we talk. And we want to talk to our dogs and give them that energy, that baby talk, whatever it is. But most of the time, that talk is actually energy that causes our dogs to bounce around. And we're even worse, you know, when we come in the door and we're excited to see our dog.
Yes.
You know, we're talking real high-pitched to them, giving them a lot of energy. Well, guess what? We are shaping that dog that bounces around, jumps on you, gets out of control, runs, you know, does wheelies in the living room. So if we can be intentional about our interaction and think, okay, I want to shape a dog that is calm every time I come home, whether it's with some of my friends or just me, I want them to greet me in a calm way. We need to show that demeanor in ourselves and help shape the dog that way.
You
know, if we go to greet a dog, we want them to stand on all fours and act like a lady or a gentleman, and we'll calmly rub on them and love on them, but it's got a different feel. We tone down that energy so they can stay composed.
Yeah. Remember the Peanuts cartoon when Snoopy was Joe Cool and he wore the sunglasses? I think that's the analogy I'm going to remember so that I can do it. But how about in a training or a field situation? How do we do that, Ronnie?
Yeah, you know, and again, like just to reiterate what Susanna just said, it really starts with us.
Yeah.
You know, if we're that leader, a dog is a pack animal, and a social ladder of order is important to them, very important to them. So you've got to be the leader, and that's a fair leader to your dog. It's not being loud, that's just being a fair leader. So if you're calm and collected and composed and confident in what it is that your agenda, what you're trying to associate to the dog, it bleeds off. Your dog is a reflection of you.
Yeah. You know, we maybe because we're so bad at it, when a dog actually does what we want them to do in the field, we are psyched. I mean, fireworks and pom-poms. There might be a place for that, but most of the time, no?
Most of the time, particularly we're in the field, we're doing what the dog wants to do. They're excited anyway.
Yeah,
so if we add more excitement into the situation, we're going to cause the dog to make an infraction. That's not the dog's fault.
Yeah.
We did it.
Yeah.
You know, our behavior did it.
Yeah.
So if we can be conscientious about that and try to interact with our dog in a way that keeps them exhibiting the behavior that we want. You know, if we want that dog to stand still on birds, we're not going to be doing a whole lot of talking while he is. We're not going to be walking right by him real fast because he's going to break and follow us in. You know, there's certain things that we can do to help set them up for success.
You know, I don't advocate using controlled substances, but if we were just slightly more laid back at every instance of working with a dog, especially in the field or in a room like this with 25,000 people, for that matter, would that help?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think it would help us personally.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Tell me more about that.
Well, that's the thing that we talk about. You know, if you've got to put your hand on a dog or you feel that you need to mark behavior, what we do is we'll put our hand on the dog's withers or the shoulder. And it's not to pet the dog necessarily, but just a calming touch. And what that does is if you feel that when you touch the dog, then he feels it, and then it reciprocates back to you.
I am a believer. in the last few months, we've been doing that. And I think it helps. Now, I'll let you know next season, but that touch with no other motion seems to strike gold with a lot of dogs. Is it a genetic thing, or is it going back to the, not all the way to the womb, but to your litter mate who's right next to you? What do you think that is, Susanna?
I think it's a relationship thing. Yeah. And I think our relationships with our dogs aren't talked about often enough.
Yeah.
Because our relationship really does dictate a lot of the dog's behavior.
Yeah.
Even when we don't realize it. And Ronnie and I have seen it in multiple situations the last couple of years where we think we know a dog and they are performing at a certain level consistently every day. They are giving us the same behavior every day. And then maybe their owner comes in to pick them up. And whatever relationship that dog had with the owner when they dropped them off for training, that relationship is still intact as it was that day. It has not changed in the dog's world. Their relationship with Ronnie and I may be different, and they have learned things with us.
Yeah.
But in their mind, they're going right back to their last interaction with their owner.
Yeah.
And that behavior pops up almost immediately when they see their owner. They start exhibiting that same behavior, whether it's pulling on a lead or bouncing up and down, jumping on you, sitting. You know, for pointing dogs, we're not real big proponents on having them sit. We see a lot of that. There's a lot of things that just pop up. You're like, where did this come from? It's from the relationship.
Well, how do we make a better relationship with our dog, whether we're picking them up at Smith Kennels or we're just letting them out of the crate in the morning? Ronnie, you got any thoughts on how to start that process?
Yeah, I think really it starts with what it is that you expect from your dog.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to have a plan. And I think part of that plan, too, is anything that you do with your dog, look ahead. Is that going to, we have that question asked to us a lot, is it okay if I do this with my dog? Well, we don't know.
Yeah.
But think about, can this negatively follow you to the field? And if the answer is yes, then probably you shouldn't do that with your dog.
Yeah, that's the only time they remember stuff very well, isn't it? Can you give me an example of that? I'm intrigued now because I'm cataloging all of those things that I've done, but maybe they're not the common problems that you two face. Is there one where they the owner has basically ingrained the red flag habit in a dog?
Yeah, let's start with we'll use an easy one, a squeaky toy. And I tell you, if you have ever tried to buy a toy for a dog that doesn't squeak, it's difficult, you know, because they love them. But does it cause problems? Not always. In fact, there are sometimes that you could use a squeaky toy to help a dog want to pick something up that does not have a strong retrieving instinct. But there's also the other spectrum where maybe it causes a dog to be hard mouthed or chew on his game. So if that negatively follows you to the field, if you see that in the field, then you probably shouldn't be doing that.
I buy them by the bulk, dozens, and the first thing I do is take out my sharpest knife and remove all the squeaky toys.
Right.
Because you're right, you cannot buy those things without one.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Susanna, do you ever encounter another one like that, that where most of us are going, oh, man, I wish I hadn't done that?
Well, I think one of the really common ones is having a pointing dog to sit.
Yeah.
We see that a lot. And one of the reasons it happens is these pointing dogs, they're energetic in the home. You know, they're hard to manage as a puppy. You know, they want to go. So the first thing that a lot of people do is teach their puppy to sit.
Yeah.
And that's an easy way to get a dog to be still, because they can't be bouncing around too much if they're sitting down.
It is a quick fix.
It is it's an easy fix. It's a quick fix. And oftentimes it promotes a mindset change in the dog where they are mentally more composed because they know they can't move if they're going to be sitting.
Yeah.
So, then it grows from there to they're sitting when they're feeding them. They're sitting them before they go out the back door. All these tend to be moments of excitement.
Yeah.
They are times in a dog's life when, boy, they're just so excited about what's going on and they just can't control themselves. And then they learn to sit to essentially self-compose. Well, then we take them to the bird field, yeah. and we present them with the most exciting thing that they have, hunting, bird scent. And we ask them to be still because we want them to point and stand until released, right?
Yeah.
Well, in the dog's world, it's a moment of excitement. A lot of times, they just revert back to that old behavior, and they yeah. just sit.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with the dog sitting on point. It doesn't affect their performance. It doesn't impact how they find birds. It's just us as humans have decided a pointing dog stands on point, and that's what we want to see. So if we want to see it in the field, we need to work on it on a daily basis with our dogs in their life, not yeah. just in the field. It has to be consistent throughout for the dog.
Yeah, and the key is the nexus. We want them to stand steady on point. We need to back think that
Absolutely.
To the house and the yard. Mm-hmm. That's the takeaway for me on that. We're going to have more of that, but you were going to say something just now.
Oh, I was just going to say, balance is always key.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay if you have your pointing dog sit, but it's the default that we're cautious about, that habitual sit, that any moment of excitement, those dogs sit down.
Yeah.
We want to create that balance where they're able to stand and be composed because that's the behavior we want to see in the field.
Yeah, we all talk a good game about that. And instead of sitting, you know, or a lot of times we don't even mention sitting. Well, he woes for his food. Mm-hmm. Good. Mm-hmm. So we're halfway mm-hmm. there and that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
It's not so hard as long as we're thinking about, like you both said, the downstream effect of all of that. What do you want to happen on your next hunt? I'm not that long range a thinker, so I need more of those kind of reminders. You're listening to the Upland Nation podcast. We're in the Upland Nation here in Sioux Falls, South Dakota at the Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic. On my left, your right in your speakers, is Susanna Love. On my right is Ronnie Smith. Smith Kennels, what's the name of the nearest town anymore? I've lost track since you left your hometown.
Yeah, well, we have relocated to, we're about 25 miles north of Pawhuska, Oklahoma.
Ah, yes, scenic Pawhuska. Don't blink, right?
That's right.
We're actually a major tourist attraction. We have the Pioneer Woman there, brings a lot of people in. It's a neat little town.
Yeah. Well, we won't talk about the Pioneer Woman because I just get hungry when I think about what she does. But we'll be back with more on this and a few other subjects, including steadiness is my viewers and listeners' number one priority. I can't think of anybody better to talk about that. We'll be right back.
We'll have more, of course, from Pheasant Fest and Ronnie and Susanna. And then in our Handle It segment, a dog startled by birds. I'm Scott Linden, and it's all coming up on the Upland Nation podcast. First, a word from LandTrust.com. Yeah, planning that big eastbound trip for this season. Probably going to stop and stay in Montana. So I'm looking at all of the choices I have at LandTrust.com. Now, the account is free. You don't even need it to shop around, but you will want to open one so that you can start saving some of your choices there. It's kind of like I have an analogy no one's used before. It's like a rental car. You arrive in a new city. You're looking for something reliable that you can count on. Well, you go to the rental car counter and you go to the big guys because they have something most of the time that will meet your needs. LandTrust.com is the same way with access to private property. Walk up to the counter such as it is, LandTrust.com website, and shop around, pick the model you like, pick the place you want to go, pick how long you want to be there, and know with confidence that the place has been inspected, vetted, the landowners are good and they want you there, and you'll have it all to yourself. Learn more about the concept and then how it works at LandTrust.com. And of course, once you get there, you want to shoot straight and shoot better. Most of the time, you can do that fairly easily. Just put in a TruLock choke to improve your shooting in a matter of moments. TruLock, TruLockChokes.com. Yeah, they'll have a choke tube for you. They have 2,000 choices. And the whole point is They're better than those factory-installed jokes. They're better engineered. The materials are better. You will get more accurate, more complete patterns. Take it to the range. Shoot a few rounds on the pattern board. Compare for yourself. If you want to shoot better, change your chokes. And every TruLok choke comes with a warranty for a lifetime. Learn more at TruLokChokes.com.
Welcome back to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, at least virtually, because by the time you hear this, I'll be in the training yard, I'm sure, and so will they, near Pawhuska, Oklahoma. Ronnie Smith, Susanna Love, at the Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic here in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I mentioned briefly that steadiness is a high priority for a lot of us, and we understand, and you hear it every day. Well, steady to wing is good enough for my dog. Okay, I want a field trial champion, or I want a hunt test blue ribbon dog. That's a different kind of steadiness. But we all want our dogs to hold still when they scent a bird. What are we doing wrong most of the time? And I mean from way back. Have we introduced birds wrong? I know I'm being negative about this, but it's the simplest way to get to the point. How do we do that the right way, Ronnie?
You know, there is a revelation that Susanna and I have had in well, it's been a while now, so, but, you know, even when we're working our little puppies, our little eight-week-old puppies, and we've got them on quail, on Johnny House quail, these are birds that retrap. When those puppies go on point, you know, it seems that any time a dog goes on point, we feel that we need to go in and flush those birds immediately because that's what you're supposed to do, right?
Yeah.
But we have found that all that does is it imprints those young dogs with flushing early.
Huh.
If you will let that pup point his birds and you stay out of the equation, because he's stalking that game.
Yeah.
That's all he's doing.
Yeah.
This little domesticated predator is stalking game. And if you'll stay out of the equation, you will be surprised at how long those little 10, 12-week-old puppies will hold point. I mean, okay. 15, 20 minutes.
Oh, my goodness.
It's unbelievable.
Number one, little domestic predators ought to be the name of a pygmy football team or something like that. Pee-wee football team, not a pygmy football team, although that'd be cute, too. I love it. So, okay, so, boy, talk about a revelation. I mean, did that just come to you one day? I mean, that is truly an epiphany for a lot of people.
Well, you know, we have always done it. My father did it with his field trial dogs. We didn't necessarily do it with the puppies, but
yeah.
That's what we would do with the broke dogs is we would always let them stand there for a long period of
yeah.
time, right? And
yeah.
if they started to lose intensity, then we would walk in and make something happen.
Yeah.
The puppies were just set up to develop those young dogs really well. And it's something that we started to incorporate at a young dog. And in another thing, you know, when we bring those young dogs into the field, a lot of times we would let them watch a quail run off
uh-huh.
so that they would go towards that quail. And the reason for that is it's mindset. The training of a dog should give you enforceable manners in the field, but it does not create a bird finder. Birds create a bird finder, and that's a mindset. So if you let that little puppy see those birds go, then he knows there's birds there, and he comes into that environment looking for birds, and they'll stay focused and hooked longer than if you just took him out in the field with birds that were planted.
Yeah, that he didn't even know were there.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We train the duck search that way in NAVDA to a great degree. The first few times you show him the duck, then you take him away and you put it out there, and he says, oh, yeah, I know it's out there. Those are both revelations to me and maybe to other people as well. But they're both the logical downstream thinking that you've described in our first segment. That's what we want in the field. How do we do it in the yard? And especially, let's say, the second part of that where we want puppies to be a little more birdy, if we want to use that term. I've helped a lot of people with young dogs trying to get them whether introduced to gunfire or introduced to bird finding with wings and wing clipped or, you know, shackled birds and or dead birds. Is that a part of this same process? Do we start there in the yard with a dead bird or something, and then we can take that bird and hide it and help? Do they? Am I making any sense?
Absolutely. So usually when we introduce a dog to birds, we want that bird to be where it's not going to flap around and,
yeah,
and
yeah.
hit a puppy in the
scratch
nose and scare it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we might restrain that bird so that the puppy, if it's a young dog particularly, can be inquisitive.
Yeah.
Can smell it, see it, maybe get its mouth on it, get a feel for what exactly that is so exciting to them. Because
yeah.
I know that they know it's exciting, but they're still not sure what it is. So we give them some time to kind of get a feel for it, and then we go to planting birds. And what we usually do with our puppies at home, we'll start introducing birds to them, before they're 8 weeks old. But before
yeah.
puppies leave our property, they've been out on a lot of puppy walks, and they've been on birds. Usually we start with quail with them because we've got Johnny houses. We can
yeah.
take a little walk out there. We turn some birds loose. And if they start working scent and encounter a bird, you know, we're really on the right track. We can really start that development. So that is our puppy's first interaction with birds, typically, is where it's in a very natural setting. We're not controlling everything. The genetics are the driving force for those puppies, and you can see the light come on. That fire is ignited, and they start having more and more success. You know, if you've got a dozen birds out, they've got an opportunity for a lot of bird contact, and it really gets them focused and thinking birds. And at that young age, they're little sponges. They're imprinted with that. So even if they don't see birds for a period of time after they go to their new homes, they've still got that memory, that focus in there. And we try to keep them exposed to birds periodically as they grow up.
You just made me think about it. Our entire discussion has been about not allowing them to learn the wrong thing first.
Mm.
Making the first experiences, yard, table, house, part of the process that ends with a steady dog on the other end in the field. That's, again, the light bulb has gone off over my head on that. A lot of us don't think far enough down the process. Sticking with the steadiness thing a little bit more, we got a young dog. He's covering some ground. And he does point. How do we extend that point beyond the puppy stage where he's holding it way longer than I thought a puppy would hold a bird? We want to keep doing that. You know, a lot of us will, you know, check cord, half hitch, flank touch. But how do we deliver that stuff in the right way? You know, we all see that. Hell, I put it in the book. But it's hard to explain how to make it work from a practical standpoint. Ronnie, you want to take one of those techniques, or maybe you got a better one?
Well, yeah, so, you know, once we have everything that we're doing with these young dogs and even through training is development. You know, we are trainers, and we get caught on that word of, you know, training your dog, and that is that. But as we're training, we're trying to develop that dog.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
For us, the way that we steady a dog up is obviously the use of the wool post and the flank collar. And we have a very good collar foundation on those dogs. We spend a lot of time stopping those dogs in a controlled environment before we ever go to the field, like several weeks,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Because it has to be an absolute condition response when you go start using that to steady a dog up. And we're playing off of the predator, right? So this, and I keep saying predator, that's kind of the word that we're using this year, because we want people to look at their dog for what it truly is. It's
yeah.
a domesticated predator. If it has, you know, strong prey drive, then it is a domesticated predator. So every predator stalks game, man included. We all wait or sneak up and stalk game. In a dog is no different. So with the steadying up method that we're using, is the steadying up process is happening after the flush.
Yeah.
Right? So we bring dogs into that situation, a bird situation, we have the means of the birds getting out of there and flying off the premise, so that's a homing pigeon. And as that dog chases, we will just stop him with our collar foundation, and incrementally, time after time, that dog starts to steady up on his own. And on the steadiness, so there's three degrees of steadiness. There's a dog will hold point in on the flush, go with the birds. Number two is a dog will hold point and stand through the flush and release on voice, cue, report, whatever. Three is steady to wing shot and deadfall, where he never moves. We train all of our gun dogs at the second level, yeah, where they're steady through, yeah, wing. And the reason for that is because it creates an honesty factor in that young dog. You know, if they come in, that first year dog comes in and birds get up wild and he just lays his ears back and chases into where they land and it just snowballs out of control. But if he'll stop to flush and watch those birds fly off, then he's just more composed, more honest, and it's easier to enforce as well.
Yeah, and probably easier to teach the next level if you choose to do it.
Absolutely. If you have the proper foundation, yeah, the only difference is now you just don't allow him to break,
yeah,
on the gun.
Yeah.
It's that easy.
Well, Susanna, take that situation. We've got a dog, the collar, you use a flank collar, and mm-hmm, sometimes it's a real collar, and maybe it's a half inch, but how bird flies, we want to enforce whatever we're trying to enforce. Are we holding on, or are they still connected to the woe post? Give me the nexus right there.
Okay, so to take it just a step back, we do our woe post work away from the bird field.
Yeah,
we want,
okay,
a super controlled environment,
yeah, yeah,
and all we're doing is teaching a cue. That's,
yeah,
all that it is. We're teaching,
yeah,
a cue on the flank. And one of the reasons we use the flank, and one of the reasons the flank works so perfectly, is because it is a blank slate, if you will. They've never been cued on the flank before.
Yeah.
They don't have baggage. You know, on the neck, well, they may have been pulling on a rope all their,
yeah,
life, or they may have really have a good recall on the neck, or maybe taught to sit or to lay down on the neck. There's a lot of things going on that they've already learned on the neck. And with a pointing dog, you know, being able to stand still is the hardest thing for them to do. So as we go through training, we want to make sure they're successful. We want to make sure that there's clarity and they go through each stage proficiently.
Yeah.
So by going to a separate point of contact on the flank, teaching them on a mechanical cue of a rope, just simply stand still until you're cued to release. Then we transition to the e-collar, practice, 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 super low levels, and all it is a simple low cue.
It's just a touch.
Just you have to gain an awareness in order to gain compliance. So that's all we're trying to do, is be able to gain the dog's awareness at a distance, because that's where we're going to be in the bird field.
Yeah.
So once we've gained that, where we are confident we can stop this dog in any environment, we've practiced to where we're very sure that they have a great understanding and we can stop them at a low level. And from an outsider's view, you know, somebody walked up and watched me stopping a dog, they might say, well, why'd that dog stop? Why'd he choose to stop? He didn't choose to stop. I cued him to stop, so he complied. But we want the dog to have that level of comfort with,
yeah,
it. And then when we transition to the field, we're able to do practice reps stopping because we've changed environment. So again, we want to do practice reps, make sure they're successful. And then we go to the bird situation.
Yeah.
And when that bird gets up, you know, if it's a super strong dog, we may stop them a little quicker. If it's a weaker dog, we may let them chase that bird,
yeah,
a little bit farther. But again, we want the same response where we push a button and the dog just looks like he chose to stop. That's that learning mindset.
I haven't heard the W word once. Whoa.
So we teach whoa once we've perfected the behavior. Once they have it perfect and we're transitioning to that e-collar, we start factoring in whoa.
So in the meanwhile, they're just feeling a touch on the flank of one sort or another, and that's the cue.
And
nothing else is the cue.
And I tell you, one reason that is so important is because, again, we're always looking towards the goal. The goal is to be in the hunting field,
yeah,
you know, creating those memories with them. So I want to know that I can stop my dog whether or not they're out of earshot.
Yeah.
I don't always know that my dogs can hear me when I say whoa. And I want to know that I can stop them no matter what is going on. Whether, you know, it's a dangerous situation, maybe it's a highway that we're hunting next to and they start heading that way, they're going to cross the highway, I need to stop them. Or maybe there's a rattlesnake in the area and I need my dog to stand still. I want to know without a doubt that whatever we encounter, I can have my dog stop and stand still, whether or not they can hear me.
Yeah. Uncle Delmar was in the rodeo business, but and when we put a wrap around a bucking bull's flank, he will not stand still. So what the heck is going on with dogs to where we can do that?
Well, and I tell you, that goes back to mindset as well. The more malleable the dog, you know, the healthier the mindset, the more joined up he is, the less of that you see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And if you start off wrong, you're going to get wrong results. But if you start off right, you, as you just described it, all of a sudden he doesn't understand. That's the cue for an eight-second ride.
Right, right. And going back to when you said you hadn't heard whoa, and that's absolutely true. You know, you don't want to teach whoa on game.
Yeah.
No more than you want to teach here on the retrieve, right? A couple of reasons. One, because now we're going back to acting like a human. We're training with words, right? Instead of truly paying attention to the dog and the function and the development, right? And two, that's where you can get negative connotation. You know, if you're saying whoa, whoa, whoa on birds, not only is it a distraction, there's pressure, there's stress involved with that. So you want to teach whoa, or the ability to stop your dog away from game, so that you can apply it to game without any negative connotation.
Yeah. Well, it makes all the sense in the world. We just got to apply it, you know, and that's the hard part. I want to, because I've been to the seminars and I've never quite grokked it, we got a post, we got a dog on a half hitch somewhere away from the post, and we're training compliance to the woe, to the stop. How do we tempt that dog away from the post to where they stretch that line out and then get the pressure on their flank? Do we just let them figure it out, let them move, or are we creating distractions?
No, we're not creating any distractions. What we want is to set the dog up just for a gentle cue on the flank, and that is our responsibility as trainers. That is our responsibility to make sure they don't run to the end and hit it hard, because that's not what we want. That's not the goal here. What we want them to do is go with us as we gently ease them into that cue. And then we go on a little ways. We may be 10, 12 feet away from the dog. And we wait for that dog to process, okay, I was just cued on the flank and now I'm standing still. And once we get an acknowledgement from the dog, then we simply walk back to them, rub on them, take them off, and then we go check cord and do something else.
You're not saying heel. You're not saying come. You're not expecting them to walk at heel per se.
No.
You're just the low key, subtle distraction.
I'm trying not to be a distraction.
Uh-huh.
Honestly,
uh-huh.
I don't want them to have to think about what I'm doing. I want to be the invisible force that is in the right place at the right time to keep them successful. That's honestly my goal, is to be that guide that keeps them learning and keeps them successful.
As they say, may the force be with you. Ronnie Smith, Susanna Love, Smith Kennels, Pawhuska, Oklahoma. What's the website for you two?
SmithKennels.com.
I can figure that one out. Two N's in kennels. Oh, great. I've learned so much once again. I got a chance to talk with two good friends. It's been a spectacular Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic. I hope for you two as well. Thanks so much for being a part of the Upland Nation podcast.
Thank you very much for having us. Yeah.
Well, that was fun. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. I learned something. I bet you did too. Always great to talk with those two about just about anything. And in fact, off mic, we talk about a lot of things. So anyway, thanks, Ronnie. Thanks, Susanna. See you next year. Coming up, we have our Handle It question. we'll be addressing a question about a young dog that reacts weirdly around birds. No, I don't mean funny looking. That's my dog. But you'll see what I mean in just a moment. And it's all brought to you by MidwayUSA.com. They do have just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors. And now they're offering you a special arrangement. Get 10% off your next order if you sign up for their email or their text notifications. On new products, specials, promotions, sales, that sort of thing, 10% off. Yeah, that's worth the effort, in my book at least. Learn more about why their number one goal is customer satisfaction. Take a look at MidwayUSA.com. And speaking of guarantees, SageAndBreaker.com offers a guarantee on all of their stuff. Gun cleaning, gun care, everything from consumables like something to clean your gun, firearms, grease. It's all right there at the range. A couple days ago, I used their bore cleaning kit on two guns. Yeah, two guns. Cleaned the bores on two guns in about 30, 40, maybe 50 seconds. Drop the weighted cord down the barrel. Pull it through. The first thing that hits that barrel is that brass brush. Gets out all the really hard to get out stuff. And then that nice swabby long snaky thing. Cleans it up. Look down the barrel. It's bright and clean. Learn more about all their products at sageandbreaker.com. Sign up for their email list and you won't miss out on new products as they come down the pipe. Yeah, thank you so much for supporting the question and answer portion of the social media pages these days. Thought it would be fun to just kind of explore some of your needs, very specific needs, and perhaps needs that are of interest to a lot of people when it comes to both our Handle It segment and then the road trip segment, of course, too. So the first question I got was from Tim Wright. He says, my 8-month-old puppy was extremely startled by her first bird flush. How should I proceed? Well, there's a lot of ways to deal with this. Remedially is not the best way. So let's go back to square one. Tim, square one is in the yard somewhere, so keep looking until you find it. Get on it. Maybe it's tucked into bushes or something. But you need to spend a little bit more time there. Your 8-month-old is not too old to start over again with a refresher course. Remember, first, all bird contacts should be positive. Now, Tim, you didn't mention gunfire, so I hope you weren't shooting and that was part of the problem. Or a noisy, scary bird launcher. Those are two things to train for separately. Right now, let's get back to the basics. When you get your pup in a good mood, having fun interacting with you, then start pulling out feathers or a bird wing. And as the pup matures or as it gets more comfortable around that, then you can pull out maybe a dead frozen bird and then eventually a dead thawed bird. You want the pup to investigate, poke, smell, taste, bite, carry around, all those things that a good bird dog should do. This is one of the things that defines birdiness in a dog. At this point, pup can do no wrong. There's no rules that it has to follow in terms of what it's doing to or with the bird. So don't chase him around. Don't ask him to come to you so he'll release it to you. Don't try to steal the bird. Just let that pup have a good time getting used to the smell, the feel, the taste. Then as the pup matures, you can add live birds. First shackled so that the wings and feet can't move and scratch or startle the pup. And then after that, wing locked birds. If you don't know how to wing lock a bird, look it up. It's on YouTube, I'm sure. And again, the pup is always right. There's no rules, so no rules can be broken. At this point, you just want the dog curious, interested, and happy around birds. Once you've done it all in the yard, starting at square one, take it outside the yard, maybe with the dog on a very loose check cord so it doesn't take off on you. You might have to start back a few steps, but once all that is going and the dog is happy around birds, then you can start flying birds from a distance and then closer, and then closer. Now, this is not training for steadiness. This is just to get the dog used to birds and what they do. There's some suggestions for you. Tim Wright, I hope we helped a little bit here. Thanks for being a part of the Upland Nation podcast. And it's all brought to you by ESPAmerica.com. Reminded yet again why I love my new ESP hearing protection devices. At the range, shot 100 rounds. And you know what's funny? My shoulder didn't hurt. I did not flinch. Part of that is related to noise. I know it's all in my head, but so are my ears. So I'm protecting them. You know, hearing loss is cumulative. It is permanent. What? Yeah. Oh, I thought so. Yeah, I have a little trouble with that sometimes. So I'm protecting what I have left. If you want to learn more about your choices when it comes to custom fit, high tech hearing protection devices, go to ESPAmerica.com. And yes, I always wear my hearing protection when I'm at Mid Valley Clays and shooting school. Look to your left. If he's not shopping for a gun, then you are. Yeah, half of us are shopping for a new shotgun right now. And who couldn't use a little bit of expert advice? Say from my friend Dave Fiedler at MidValleyClays.com. Dave's not only a bird hunter, he's an expert clay target shooter, a champion, and a great instructor. So he knows what we need, especially if we want one gun to do all of that. But Dave has the answers for you, and he's glad to take your call. So get the number for MidValleyClays.com and then call Dave Fiedler and tell him I sent you. They are sub-gauge central. They've got a whole bunch of great guns in stock in all the small gauges as well as the 12s. And they have a line on some of those hard-to-find shotguns as well. Counsel with Dave at MidValleyClays.com. Well, that was a fun one. Ronnie and Susanna, thank you so much. Hey, if you want to learn more about what they're doing, go to smithkennels.com. If you commented or offered a suggestion on some of these dog handling questions, I sure appreciate that. If you left a rating or a review, thank you so much. And thank you to all our sponsors, Sage and Breaker, Pro Plan Sport Dog Food, ESP America, Mid Valley Clays, Trulock Chokes, Midway USA, LandTrust.com, and High Viz Shooting Systems. Hey, there's always something new to read or watch at FindBirdHuntingSpots.com. I'll see you there. I'm Scott Linden. Thanks for listening to the Upland Nation Podcast.